Hello, hello, everyone.
Hi.
Welcome to Tea and Gemstones, your podcast home for anything and everything to do with the history, science, and social commentary of gemstones, jewelry, and precious metals. I am your host, Jen. I am a lifelong sparkle enthusiast with a background in history, reading, and writing way too much, and I find a lot of joy in all the little details of, well, everything. Thank you to everyone who has been leaving ratings and reviews on Spotify and especially Apple Podcasts. That direct feedback is what keeps the show discoverable in the algorithm so I don't vanish into internet oblivion. Okay, everyone, for this episode, I wanted to explore the idea of taking a piece of the natural world, a little specific slice of nature, and rendering it into jewelry. And maybe this area of nature isn't something that would be a slam dunk assurance that people will find this beautiful, like flowers or rainbows. Guys, let's talk about bugs. I asked my 5-year-old daughter if bugs are icky, and she peeked at me over her Play-Doh and said, yes, and laughed. Well, I'm used to her thinking I obviously don't know what I'm talking about, but then I had to follow up by asking her, well, are diamonds gross? And she looked suitably scandalized and said exasperatedly, no, Mama, diamonds are beautiful. To which I felt like a lawyer finally coming around to my real question. I asked, if a bug is made out of diamonds, is it icky? And this kid, she just rolls her eyes at me and says, yes, diamond bugs are icky. She definitely just wanted me to leave her be and stop bothering her with questions that have such obvious correct answers. And I suppose for a lot of people when talking about bugs, they're as firm in their thoughts as my kid. It isn't a debate. They do not like bugs, no matter what medium they're rendered in. But I tend to be fascinated by the insect world. Bugs are so determined and capable. Honeybees work tirelessly for the good of the collective whole. Locusts are incredibly efficient flyers, able to twist their wings mid-flight. And is there anything more magical than a firefly's ability to create light? Dragonflies are one of the most efficient hunters in the animal world. Scientists calculate they have a 97% success rate. Humans have been captivated by the beauty and complexity of butterflies, moths, and beetles since, well, forever. People want jewelry motifs that channel characteristics and vibes they themselves want to personify. An elephant's memory and strength, panthers for sleek, sexy power, bears and lions for protection, dolphins and horses for friendship. So why do many people balk at the idea of adorning ourselves with bejeweled representations of insects? Insects possess so many positive characteristics we should proudly wear as talismans on necklaces, brooches, rings, etc. But the complexity of the insect form, their segmented body parts of head, thorax, and abdomen, their intricate wings, multiple legs, and antennae, mean the quest to render the insect world into jewelry form has been a design inspiration that pushes the time period technology of metalsmithing and gem cutting forward. Designers developed new techniques specifically to create the most amazing, lifelike, fanciful, abstract, glamorous, and innovative jewelry for these bling bugs. So it's the Tea and Gemstones way to introduce a concept, an idea, and then I try to find that idea's origins. Talking about how something is in our modern times is all well and good, but I find so much joy in digging into history. Like many times before, when I am following the thread of a jewelry historical idea backwards, our origin point is the ancient Egyptians. It's one of the very earliest examples of insect jewelry. In this case, it's the Egyptians' love affair with the scarab. In Egypt, these little insects, they're called dung beetles. They're actually not that little. They can grow to be almost an inch and a half long. And besides the not so cute name, they're not an unattractive looking beetle, you guys. They're round and dark black. The top half of their back is smooth and the lower half is vertically etched. That's the wing covers. Some of the beetles have a metallic luster. It's a great play on texture. I never thought I'd be describing dung beetles in my jewelry podcast, but they're cleverly crafted little creatures, like most insects, doing their best to make their way in the world. And the dung beetle eats, well, dung. It has a scoop-shaped head and handy little paddle-shaped antennae, and it forms manure into a ball and cleverly rolls it to a secure location for safekeeping. The ancient Egyptians watched the dung beetle rolling his poop ball and decided it must be a divine dung beetle, a scarab, who rolls the sun across the sky each day. As the sun appeared anew each morning, the scarab became a beloved symbol of rebirth, life, and regeneration. Through this desire to honor the scarab who rolls the sun, the ancient Egyptians created some of the earliest bug jewelry. And they made a lot of it. Even if only a fraction of the scarab jewelry ever made is what survived, y'all, it's a lot. From the reign of Pharaoh Amenhotep III, this guy, he had commemorative scarab amulets made to mark all sorts of significant things, like killing a big lion or marriages. He ruled over 38 years and he liked to document. Apparently, he killed over 100 lions in the first 10 years of his reign, according to the scarabs. We have over 200 surviving scarabs just from Amenhotep III. Can you imagine living in this time? And now, if there's drama, it's like, show me the text messages, show me the screenshots, show me the email, give me the receipts. Back then, if you had a dispute over timing or whatever happened, maybe someone would just dramatically stand up and be like, show me the scarabs. It's really cool with scarabs. Like whenever I talk about epic diamonds or red carpet bling, those jewelry pieces are pretty out of the purview of like the common man, the regular people. But scarabs in ancient Egypt, they were everywhere and for everybody, from pharaohs to farmers. I've talked in previous episodes about protection jewelry, people's desire to believe jewelry can duly shield them from negativity and help embolden them with positive qualities like strength and patience. During the time of the New Middle Kingdom in Egypt, around 2040 to 1295 BC, wish scarabs were popular. The Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City has a well-preserved example. It's a green stone scarab amulet about half an inch in size. It's inscribed with appropriately miniature hieroglyphs wishing to, quote, open a good year, end quote. I wonder who wore this amulet so long ago. Did they have a good year? Perhaps they previously had some hardships and a friend or a loved one gifted them this scarab, a symbol of revitalizations and new beginnings. However the year turned out for that person, the jewelry has lived on for thousands of years, continuing to express its simple message of optimism. When I was working on this episode, I'm not going to fib, I struggled with how exactly to run a thread of cohesion through this topic of insect jewelry. Would I go by timeline, start at the beginning with the ancient Egyptians and follow the development of motifs in chronological order? Usually that's what I'm inclined to do. It's the historian in me. I go methodically in order. But as I researched the bug bling origins in the sands of Egypt, I found myself enjoying reading about scarabs. And I went along this path that was very, it was very beetle focused. And I decided rather than follow a linear approach, it would be more interesting to speak in categories. So let's stay with beetles, shall we? During the Victorian age, which roughly corresponds to the reign of the era's namesake, England's Queen Victoria, that age went on from about 1837 to 1901. This is a time of lots of industrialization and people moving to cities. The growth of the urban sprawl consequently led to the demise and diminishment of everyday nature for the upper crust social classes of England. And whatever is rare can become a desired novelty, which is how I try to explain the phenomenon of the beetle and insect jewelry fad among the rich ladies of this time. There are approximately 900,000 insect species, comprising a staggering 80% of the world's total animal species. But among those nearly a million insect species is a family of beetles called Berberestidae. Forgive my poor Latin pronunciation, I dropped the subject after just a year in college. The more fun pronoun for Berberestidae is the jewel beetles. They're called jewel beetles for their glossy iridescent coloring. They can be an amazing metallic green, blue, or just a fascinating color combo like a red or yellow Rorschach test or green, red, black pinstriping. So you can't blame people for being entranced by the colors. And the jewel beetles are also big. They can get up to over 3 inches long. And one way the ladies would accessorize would be to place a live beetle in a small cage, which the lady would pin to the front of her outfit or even mount in her hair or a hat. Sometimes the poor beetles would not be allowed to live, though I suppose what kind of life is it to be stuck in a tiny cage riding around on the lapel of a society broad? But the deceased beetles would have their naturally beautiful bodies accented with additions of diamonds and gemstones placed all over them. Think taxidermy brooches. The Victorians' preference to wear beetles both alive and deceased and decorated meant the insects were pilfered from the exotic British colonies, resulting in both great harm to the insect population numbers and concerns raised about this bug jewelry harvesting using enslaved laborers, like a lot of colonial exports at this time. You can have the opinion that perhaps bugs are icky, but really I am of the mindset that it's this Victorian beetle jewelry fad and all the framework behind it that kind of feels icky. But the pinnacle in terms of, I guess, craftsmanship for Victorian beetle jewelry is the complete beetle parure of Lady Granville. So a parure is a full set of jewelry meant to be worn all together, like earrings that match a necklace, that match a bracelet, etc. You get the idea. But the crux of a good classic parure is if it contains the literal crowning touch of a tiara. You may be thinking there can't possibly be one of those for beetles, and you would be wrong. We do have one. It is a parure of a tiara, a pair of earrings, and a delicate collar-style necklace, all set with over 40 iridescent green dried weevils. The weevils are mounted in yellow gold, accented with metalwork in lotus flower shapes. The unique collection was a gift from the Portuguese ambassador to the wife of the British Foreign Secretary, Lord Granville. The beautiful weevils had been sourced from Portugal's former colony, Brazil. Lord Granville was concerned the elaborate jewelry set could be perceived as bribery. Portugal was actively looking to influence the dividing of the lands in Africa. But the lord's wife was so enamored with the green bling bugs, she bypassed her husband and accepted the gift personally. And the Lady Granville must have really conveyed to her descendants how much she loved her beetle parure. The set remained in the Granville family for 127 years until it was sold to a jewelry collecting firm in London. And in 2016, it went to live in the British Museum, who kindly put high-resolution photographs and all the history and acquisition notes online for people like me to find. Leaping forward a bit from the Victorian times, scarabs and beetles did remain a motif in jewelry, though their popularity waned from god-in-the-sky levels and versions became rendered in metal and gemstones, not taxidermied creations. Tiffany & Co. actually dedicated two pages to scarab jewelry in the 1911 Blue Book catalog. The section was titled Tiffany Favril Beetle Jewelry and featured 12 different glass scarab designs set in 18 karat gold, starting at the reasonable price of $2.50 for a pendant. 70 years later, Tiffany's brought back the beetle nostalgia designs in the 1980s. This time, the beetles were set more affordably in sterling silver. This is the time period when sterling silver was soaring in popularity. Though these 1980s beetles were available only through mail order, they did not make it into stores. For fun, I opened up my Etsy app and typed in beetle jewelry into the search bar, and I got results totaling 14,763 items. I'm not sure the number I expected, but that feels high. Lots of beetle-y choices. And, you know, I had to, I sorted high to low. So out of these nearly 15,000 items, the highest result was a 14 karat gold jade scarab ring listed for almost $14,000. But reading the item description, it instantly screamed scam. The store said, "No refunds, no returns, no exchanges, but love, hope, clear communication." What? Guys, be careful out there. The vintage jewelry world is fraught with fakes and exaggerations. Check reviews, look for letters of appraisal from official parties, just my little PSA there. And maybe if you're craving a beetle in your life, go the artisan handcrafted route. If I thought 14,763 items seemed like a lot of beetle choices, I should have known this next insect would be overwhelmingly popular. What winged creature do you think gave me the Etsy search result of 334,000 items? It's by far the most popular insect, a universal symbol of rebirth, transformation, and beauty. It's butterflies. Sometimes I think butterflies shouldn't count as bugs, at least as far as the idea of making icky things beautiful goes, because butterflies are already universally considered attractive. People like them, okay? A butterfly is the national insect of both Denmark and Finland. Heck, the monarch butterfly is the official state insect of 7 different United States. But here I go with some tea, just putting my opinions out there. I think butterflies are cliche, and I guess it's just my personality that I'm more inclined to be interested in like fireflies, dragonflies, or bees than butterflies, because those insects seem so much more interesting than a super delicate bug that just looks pretty. Maybe that's just me being a hipster. Do we still use that word anymore? Being a hipster and determined not to like what everyone else likes. But I think my benignness to butterflies puts me in a minority because there would not be thousands and thousands of butterfly motifs and jewelry without customer demand. So typically I'd be looking to my reliable source of ancient jewelry artifacts for a really old butterfly example. Hello, what do you got, ancient Egyptians? Well, while the ancient Egyptians did leave us things like tomb paintings featuring the African monarch butterfly, there's not an abundance of early butterfly bling produced in the hot sands. I suppose the scarab's miracle of rolling the sun across the sky for a daily rebirth was more than enough of a reincarnation sentiment than a worm growing fragile wings. Maybe it's the delicate nature of those wings and the gentle way the butterfly rides the breeze, but many cultures associate the butterfly as a symbol of the human soul. In Japan, butterflies were linked to the femininity of a woman's spirit while she's still alive, but a white butterfly heralded a deceased spirit looking for rest. In ancient Mexico, the butterfly was the companion of the god Xochifilia, the god of springtime, food, and love. But like Japan, the Mexicans connected some butterflies to the souls of dead women, specifically those who passed in childbirth. For the ancient Greeks, Psyche, the goddess of the soul, wife of Eros, aka Cupid, Psyche is depicted as a lovely woman with butterfly wings. So there is no doubt of the connection between butterflies and womanhood, and that beauty and fragility is a challenge for jewelry designers. The task of rendering the physical form of a butterfly into jewelry led to some amazing innovations. The jewelry designer's desire to replicate the tiny movements of their living inspiration resulted in a new technique, entremblant. It's a French phrase, so apologies for my North Carolina accent. It literally means to tremble. Setting a piece of jewelry entremblant meant some of the metalworks, say like butterfly wings, would be on thin coiled metal wire, very glamorous springs. This would allow your bejeweled insect bling to really move and quiver, to tremble as if it were alive. Beyond using gemstones and metal to craft butterflies from the human imagination, humans have also taken the lazy, easy way out and just used real butterflies to craft bling. From the Art Deco period up to the mid-1960s, it was quite popular to incorporate actual bits of butterfly wings into jewelry. Specifically, the South American Morpho butterfly, which has vibrant, bright, royal blue wings edged in velvety black and white dots. The Morpho butterflies were captured in rainforests and their wings sent off to be mounted under glass cabochons and set into lots of kinds of jewelry, especially brooches and pendants. Because humans are kind of terrible, the Morpho butterfly population plummeted, and luckily some smart people stepped in. The public relations of wearing real butterfly wings kind of shamed people into like, hey, stop it. Nowadays, you can still get real wings for jewelry, but they are, well, they should be, most of them are, from butterflies raised sustainably in butterfly farms. The butterflies are allowed to live a full life and die of old age at around 130 days. Still not my favorite thing. I can't say I endorse it, though some economists say the butterfly farms are a good income source for locals and it actually protects the wild rainforest. But I mean, I stand by my stance that animal parts belong to animals, not in human decorations. But let's be more cheerful and go back to talking about when insects are crafted from sparkles and metal. More recent times, like the 1990s and forward, the celebrity most connected to the butterfly motif is undeniably the greatest modern diva, Mariah Carey. Especially in the 1990s, Mariah made butterflies part of her brand identity. Her MTV Cribs tour of her New York City apartment featured a guest room with every inch from floor to ceiling adorned with butterfly decorations. I mean, the songstress's sixth studio album was named Butterfly, and it sold 10 million global copies. In the realm of jewelry, Mariah loves to wear butterfly rings, especially in times of her romantic life experiencing upheaval. While making said album Butterfly, Mariah divorced her notoriously controlling husband Tommy Mottola, and Mariah replaced her wedding ring with a Van Cleef & Arpels butterfly ring. It's an icy insect of white gold and over 3 carats of pave white diamonds, and it retails for about $42,000. And if it's a good idea to replace a wedding ring with a butterfly once, why not do it twice? In 2018, when the singer called off her engagement to Australian billionaire James Packer, she dramatically replaced her enormous 35-carat engagement ring with a pair of diamond butterfly rings. Butterflies are beautiful, it is not in dispute, and humans like looking at symmetrical patterns. The butterfly's 2 wings, 2 antennae, and 6 legs open up to create a very pleasing picture. Their wings come in all colors of the rainbow with shimmering iridescent qualities to boot. Couple those aesthetics with the message of new beginnings, transformation, and the just-can't-shake-it association with the fragility of the human soul. It's no surprise people love butterflies, and I can't stand in the way. I won't fight it. I really won't. I do not mind it. If butterflies make you happy, please go forth and wear your butterflies. If butterflies are romantic and soft symbols of transformation, this other winged insect is considered one of the most effective and ruthless aerial predators in the world, but their fierceness hasn't stopped people from adoring the powerful, the capable dragonfly. Reaching speeds of up to 45 miles per hour and able to swiftly go in any direction, including backwards, the dragonfly utilizes its 360-degree vision range to snatch and devour other insects like mosquitoes, mayflies, gnats, even butterflies and bees. Their name, dragonfly, is a respectful recognition of these sky hunters who smash into their unsuspecting prey open jaw first. Just as people have been drawn to the gentleness of butterflies, well, people like power and strength too. While there's a lot of lore and legend around dragonflies in all different cultures, Japan has a real passion for the motif. Starting in the 8th century, dragonflies began filling Japanese art, literature, pottery, and yes, jewelry. The Japanese associated dragonflies with valor and strength and considered a sighting of a dragonfly as a bringer of good luck and general elevation of happiness. The Japanese also believed the dragonfly was the actual physical spirit of the all-important rice plant. When Japan opened up to the Western world around the 1860s, Japanese culture soared in popularity with dragonflies along for the ride. From the 1880s to about the time of the First World War, jewelry, art, architecture, and design in general were in the Art Nouveau period. Art Nouveau literally means new art in French, because doesn't everything sound fancier and nicer in French? It was a pendulum swing away from the darkness of the Industrial Revolution and Gothic mourning jewelry for this swirly, highly ornamental style that especially liked to embrace nature motifs, like dragonflies, for instance. The Metropolitan Museum of Art has a gold and diamond dragonfly brooch from Danish craftsman Edgar Benzi on display. The insect is stylized with a white, rose-cut diamond body, green cabochon eyes, and wings of ombre blue and green set in flat-cut gemstones, which gives it this stained glass window effect. Now, you would think that the slender shape of the dragonfly might be tricky to render in jewelry, or just that this is an insect without much surface area to highlight gemstones. No smooth, large, expansive beetle shell to fill or large butterfly wings, but translating the linear slashes of the dragonfly's long body and quad rectangle wings into wearable sparkly art seemed a challenge many designers embraced. Some amazing examples include the 1904 series from Julia Munson at Tiffany & Co., which featured dragonfly brooches designed to highlight black opals and pink opals. Excellent gemstone choices to channel a glittering insect. One of my favorites comes from the innovative designer Joel Arthur Rosenthal, who founded the Jar Jewelry Collection. Rosenthal is an ultra-exclusive jewelry designer who's been called the Fabergé of our time by Diane von Furstenberg. He only creates a couple dozen pieces a year, and his works are super collectible. For dragonfly representation in 1987, he crafted a yellow gold, white diamond, and rock crystal dragonfly brooch. But the entire body of the Sky Hunter, save the wings, is constructed of stacked diamond rondelles. A rondelle is a faceted bead with flattened ends. The whole effect is both prickly and alive and gorgeous. Modern dragonfly jewelry abounds with options. A quick type into trusty Google for modern dragonfly jewelry brought up 5.5 million results. There's everything from a yellow diamond price on request from Graff to artisan sterling silver pieces under $50 on Etsy to all manner of vintage and antique. If you're feeling in the mood for a talisman of power and strength, let's look beyond lions and eagles. Dragonflies are due for their praise. I want to talk now about one of my favorite insects. Who am I kidding? It is my favorite insect. It's the bee. These darling little guys, of which there are a lot, about 20,000 known bee species, they are crucial to our world's food supply. As bees go from flower to flower, they carry pollen on the itty-bitty hairs of the body and legs. It's estimated that bees visit over 90% of the world's top 107 crops. I'm not in charge of figuring out what those top 107 crops are, but I trust the people who do make those lists. Valuing these busy, buzzy helpers is not a modern discovery. If anything, we value bees a lot less than the peoples of the past. These hard little workers who help the plants grow and make honey were considered all variations of lucky, helpful, or, you know, a celestial messenger. Seriously, multiple cultures considered bees to be messengers between worlds, or messengers of the gods. The ancient Greeks, Romans, and Celts considered bees to carry the messages of their deities. The Romans specifically wrote that a swarm of bees on the move was not to be disturbed, as they were obviously carrying an important communication from a god in great haste. The ancient Mayans, Hindus, and Egyptians featured bees significantly in their cultural mythology as well, with bees representing all manner of sweet values like strength, healing, cleanliness, and fertility. There's also an interesting folklore ritual called Tell It to the Bees. This is where a beekeeper must notify their bees of all major events in their life, like a death or a marriage. If the bees are not kept well informed, the superstition is that they would move on to find another beekeeper who would talk to them. Telling it to the bees originated with the Celts and eventually moved its way across the Atlantic Ocean to New England and the Appalachians, where it really took hold. Keeping the bees in the loop of the happenings of their family was considered a sign of respect and admiration. And what's not to respect and admire about bees? Like I mentioned, they are hugely important to our food supply. They are so smart. I mean, they communicate via dancing, and they store their honey in hexagons because that's the strongest, most efficient shape. And they're adorable. It's not a stretch of the imagination to see why bees are a desired jewelry motif. Lots of powerful men have used the symbol of the bee as personal representation. The Barberini family were Italian nobles who had a trifecta of gold bees as their insignia. When one of the Barberini's own became a pope, Pope Urban VIII, he commissioned art featuring the family bees. The Barberini bees feature on each marble plinth of the 66-foot-tall sculpture over St. Peter's tomb. Napoleon Bonaparte learned of a discovery of 300 gold and garnet bees discovered in the tomb of 5th-century monarch King Childeric in 1653, and Napoleon fell in love with the bees. He declared the honeybee an imperial symbol, and in several portraits, the French emperor is depicted wearing red robes emblazoned with golden bees. In more modern bee usage, the penultimate house of Gucci loves using a good bee. Gucci has used many animal logos like a coral snake and butterflies, but the Gucci bee has won a lot of hearts. The Gucci bee first debuted in the 1970s and had a big time resurgence in popularity, starting in 2016 when a bunch of other brands like Dolce and Gabbana kind of started copying it and began embroidering bees on suits and handbags. But we all love jewelry, right? That's why we're really here. Gucci has you covered there too, whether your taste tends towards long golden necklaces with bee pendants and pearls or bracelets. Interestingly, little tea here, when you browse the Gucci website and click on the product description for these jewelry pieces, the details are shockingly sparse. A bee pendant necklace retails at Gucci for a staggering $850, but in the product details, all it states is metal with gold-toned finish. That's it. Is it plated silver? Solid gold. I'm guessing not solid gold, or they would say. The only reason not to say the product materials is if they're sketchy. I'm guessing full low-end costume materials like brass or even steel. Gold tone. I have a big problem with high fashion houses selling dinky costume jewelry, which is fine as a genre on its own if it is priced accordingly. High fashion houses sell things at a massive markup. Let's step away from Gucci because now they're making me mad. How about a jewelry house who does handle their bee bling with quality and transparency? Many brands have taken the bee motif and interpreted our buzzy friends in jewelry. Take, for example, the iconic British jewelry designer Alex Munro. He founded his namesake jewelry house in 1987 and has taken the delicate, beloved bee of the English countryside and elevated it, creating a full jewelry line of necklaces, rings, earrings, and more, all featuring hand-carved and shaped bees made from sterling silver and 18-karat yellow gold. Yes, he states the product materials specifically. You wouldn't think that anything else should be a given, but there you go. Besides Alex Munro, many, many other brands have bee jewelry in their collections. Julie Voss, Susan Shaw, Olivia Burton, David Yurman, James Avery, Temple St. Clair, Helzberg Diamonds, Levion, Betsy Johnson, Sydney Evan, Elizabeth Locke. Just the tip of the honey iceberg for jewelry designed to feature the humble honeybee. It is one of my very favorite motifs in jewelry, and if you love the bee as well, and if you own bee jewelry, I would love to see it. Hit me up on Instagram at Tea and Gemstones Podcast. The world needs more bees. In all forms. When crafting insects into jewelry, the fun of not being held to creating a textbook accurate design allows for glamorous flights of fancy. I appreciate the transition made from wearing literal taxidermied specimens to embracing the solidified pieces of a designer's imagination. We wear jewelry to channel and symbolize parts of ourselves, our personalities that we want to show the world without saying a word. I believe insects should receive their fair due for the amazing qualities they can represent. Yes, we all love a powerful eagle or owl, but the dragonfly is fierce too. And the concept I was intrigued by at the beginning, the thought that made me want to write this episode, can something categorically perhaps icky become something beautiful via a transformation into jewelry? That concept is one I still like. I appreciate the usefulness and the talents of bugs. They deserve to be immortalized in gemstones and precious metals just as much as the traditionally pretty things of flowers and birds. Perhaps you will consider bringing a bling bug into your life. Appreciating the wonder of the natural world is a trend that history tells us will never go out of style. That's all for this episode, everyone. The link to the bibliography and my Patreon page for bonus episodes is in the show notes. Like I mentioned earlier, I'd love to connect on Instagram at Tea and Gemstones Podcast. Send me your bug bling or whatever else you want to talk about. I do have a shout out to Andrea at La Plus Charmant Shop for helping me with resources for this episode. Check her out on Instagram and Etsy as well for luxuries, rarities, and oddities. She's a wonderful sourcing consultant. Our theme song is by Joseph McDade with additional music provided by Audionautics. As always, I have been your host, Jen, and I sincerely hope this episode has felt like auditory sweatpants, easy to put on, and the best part of your day. Until next time, everyone, stay sparkly.